Howdy, folks. This is Jimmy Akin of the Jimmy Akin Podcast, and you're being fortified with your regular dose of Catholic vitamins. But wait, there's more.
Welcome to Catholic Vitamins, your dose of spiritual supplements from A to Z. Catholic Vitamins, specially formulated to help you achieve optimum spiritual health. It's time to energize your faith. Forget what lies behind and press on toward the goal.
We've already won. Look at how far we've come. Let's fully embrace this change that has taken place.
Here are your hosts for Catholic Vitamins, Deacon Tom Fox and his lovely wife, Dee.
Hi, my name is Deacon Tom. Who are you?
Well, my name is Dee. I haven't seen you in a while.
Where have you been? Here we are, Catholic Vitamins, once again, after an extra week delay caused by...
I know, I said maybe we'd be delayed a day or two because of your sickness, but that day or two stretched into a week.
Well, I had congestion in my head for quite a while, also in my chest, and I was on meds that were really not very kind or friendly to me.
I know. Isn't it amazing how many people we've talked to who have had this stuff?
I would venture to say there must be 25 or 30 people in a circle that we know.
Our Faith Travelers group. I mean, quite a few of us in that group have had it.
Yeah, I know. And it isn't anything that goes away quickly like a cold. Yeah. It's the doctor in my case called it acute bronchitis, and it has just hung on, and it's still in there in some small sense.
My take was the devil was attacking us.
Amen.
Because he doesn't like what we're doing.
Right. Catholic Vitamins, Catholic Radio.
But he's not going to win. We may be sick, but we'll bounce back.
I've done a couple interviews in the few days that I'm beginning to feel a little bit better. They will be upcoming in future shows. But I have to tell you that I coughed some few times. I just couldn't keep from not coughing.
Well, how long it's been. I had this before you, and I'm still coughing once
in
a while.
I know. We're supposed to be a vitamin show talking about health in our faith. What are we doing?
Well, we've had to pump up the vitamins.
Yeah, we have.
Fight off that devil.
This is Catholic Vitamin...
N for nuance.
D, what's the word nuance mean?
Right there, you've got it.
A difference in or shade of meaning... expression or sound. We have a guest today who is quite nuanced in terms of her support for pro-life rather than just being a vocal supporter of life. She is a real supporter of pro-life. Her name is Lauren Muzica, and I have wanted to meet her for quite a while, and it's taken a while to get together with her. She's an attorney, and she is, as I say, involved in pro-life stuff. We'll get into all of that, and she's a delightful lady.
You know, in the history of Catholic Vitamins, we've had a couple female attorneys now.
I know. You remember the one down in the Phoenix area?
Oh, yeah. She's also a singer.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, I lost her name.
I know. I can't remember.
But I love her voice. Absolutely love her voice. Yeah.
Maybe we could play some of her music at the end of the show. All right, so we've talked about the guest. We've talked about the what the show is.
Right. And right before your sickness, in fact, you were just starting to get sick when this happened, but you and our friend Jim, who's one of the board members for the radio project, flew out to Sacramento.
We did.
And met with Immaculate Heart Radio people out there.
Boy, was that ever wonderful. Oh, dear friends, we believe we're something in the neighborhood of 3 months from being ready to turn on our radio station, God willing. We're having trouble with our studio situation, but I'll just set that aside for now.
Don't be so quick to set it aside. We've got this whole group of prayer warriors out there.
Oh, that's right.
Please, as you're listening to this, say a prayer right now that we find the exact space we need for the studio.
Something that the Lord wants us to be in.
Yes.
And Mother Mary, Immaculate Mary.
Right.
Well, speaking of Immaculate Heart of Mary, we are going to be joining with the Immaculate Heart Radio Network. And we went out and had this wonderful meeting. We were in their conference room I'd like to take the time. It's hard to do this in a spoken program when you've got a lot to cover, to tell you about the people that we met out there, the facility that they have. I'll give you two quick stories just for our listeners. One is they have a chapel, a beautiful chapel that they have permission from the bishop to have in their locked offices, locked when there's not fully manning going on. But at 11 o'clock every day, those who can do it, not people on the board taking calls or not a host, but those that can do it, go into the chapel, and they pray for all of the prayer intentions that have come in from people who have called their 800 number or who have sent emails to them or have connected with their website. And there's a form you can fill out to give, you know, please pray for Uncle Harry who's got cancer. Please pray for my daughter who's considering a vocation.
I love that story about how you were sitting in a conference room with these people having your meeting, and then all of a sudden it was like 11 o'clock, and they said, if you want to join us, we're going to be in the chapel.
Yeah, yeah.
And of course you join them.
And I might say this is not just saying, well, pray for all of our listeners' intentions. While they did say those words, they actually had loads of sheets of paper, and one lady, KB, who's on the staff for Immaculate Heart Radio, before we actually started the rosary, she went through a lot of the slips of paper reading off the intentions.
Oh.
Very personal.
Yeah.
The other story is that they have about 20 positions that they man, that's just a word, they man once a quarter when they do fundraising, and the phones go crazy. And they're all volunteers, a lot of them volunteers from other parishes, people who have done this for a long time, and they take these calls and they have a computer. They have a headset. They have a thing where they can put in information for the credit card. And they raise money to help keep Immaculate Heart Radio going. And it's that programming that they do that will be the main part of our work on our Catholic radio station. We'll get their network feed. We hope to do some other things later. Keep us in your prayers, dear listeners, please. Even if you're driving right now, Immaculate Heart of Mary, help our project. Amen. Anything else, Dee, in our...
I've got a few things here, but I think we can wait for after break.
I'm just going to say that why don't we start with our beloved Sonia from Tennessee. But beloved Sonia is not in Tennessee.
She's in Arizona right this moment. In fact, as soon as we finish recording this podcast, I'm hopping in the car. I'm driving the hour and a half down to the valley to pick her up and bring her back up here to our home. I'm so excited.
Yeah, amen,
we'll be meeting her for the first time in person.
And Sonia has blessed us she's going to stay Saturday night, Sunday night, and Monday night. She's going to come to our Faith Travelers group. And after we have a big home feed of food from everybody's potluck.
Our fellowship meal.
Creations. She's going to give a talk. In part, telling about her
conversion.
Now, if we have time, I mean, we've got some things we want to do while Sonia is here, and we also want to give her a little bit of rest time. If we have time, I'm going to try to do a mini
interview
with her, and we'll do that as an extra. How about that?
That'd be great.
All right. Dear friends, stick with us. There is a nuance between those who say they are Catholic and those who live the Catholic faith.
This is your weekly Bible supplement on Catholic Vitamins with scriptural evangelist Sonia Corbett.
This is Sonia Corbett, where we talk about the Bible and how it applies to absolutely everything in our lives and where we can find those answers in the scriptures. And right now we've been talking about the Feast of First Fruits in the Old Testament liturgical calendar. And we were talking about how Jesus said that his body, particularly, was like a seed, and that it was glorified by dying, because in dying it produced a great harvest. Now, one of the principles of the first fruits, the Feast of First Fruits, that I really, really like, and we Catholics sometimes can use a little more of this teaching, we don't get enough of it, I don't think, is the principle of giving God the best and giving Him what's straight off the top. You know, a tithe off your gross pay, not your net. where we don't give God what's left over. I imagine that if the Jewish people had gone out to their grape harvest, squashed it all into wine and put it in the wineskins and, you know, put it up for the winter and then come back and pulled off whatever grapes were left off of those vines or in the vineyard, I imagine God probably would not have been very happy with that offering because it's not a sacrifice. God asks for sacrifices, not just some kind of trite, rote offering. He wants us to give of our best, and he wants us to even give until it hurts because that's the way he gives. And so most people spend their income first on themselves and their families, their bills. If they give to charity, a lot of times they do that with what's left over. And there's, I'm not saying not to take care of your family. I'm not. But I am saying that you cannot ever outgive God. You never, ever can risk more in any way, not just financially, but in anything. You can never risk more than God will make sure you get back. Now, he doesn't always give you exactly what you have given. For instance, you know, a lot of times we hear preachers tickling our ears with this principle that you just give God some money and God will multiply the money back to you 100-fold or whatever. And that's not the case. We're going to look at that in just a few moments, the principles of the harvest. But for right now, it's important to think about the principle of first fruits, because that came before the Pentecost feast, which was the feast of the harvest. And so the lesson of first fruits suggests that instead of giving God what's left over, or some even part of what's left over, that we should give him the very first and the very best portion, because it's due to him. He's the one who gave us the bodily strength and health to even earn money, or to make a living, or to create whatever we've created for the week, or to build whatever we've built for the week. It's by his power and his breath that we do all that we do. And so his kingdom should be our first concern and the first duty of our income. Now listen, I'm just going to confess, I have been so lax in this since we came into the church, not because I don't love to tithe, because I do, but honestly, we went so long with no income, I sort of got out of the habit. And once you get out of the habit of it, it's hard to remember it. So I have to constantly keep my church envelopes near me so I can remember, because it has honestly gotten to the point where if I don't have that reminder, I totally forget. So I have to be reminded all the time that my very best must go to him first. The first part of my day, the first and best of my income, the first and best of my energy and my effort should go to him, and then my family, and then my ministry. My best clothes should be worn to mass. I shouldn't, you know, show up in my jeans and t-shirts unless there's, you know, a reason for which I must do that. We should wear our best clothes, and we should, on Sundays even, I cook our best meals on Sunday so that it's a family time. And I'm not saying you have to do that. I'm just saying that's one of the ways. It's a little bitty way, but it's one of the ways that I like to give the first fruits to God. And I keep that principle in my mind all the time, because this tabernacle and the way God had it set up and put together, that's what he wanted. And he didn't want it from them because he was demanding it. He wanted it from them out of love, because that's how he loves us. He gave us his only begotten son. He gave us his first fruits. He gave us what was the best of what he had. And so he asks that of us. And it is hard for us sometimes to trust that God's going to help meet our bills when we have tithed. But the scriptures say in the book of Luke that if we give, it will be given back to us, shaken down and pressed down and overflowing, which just means in the terms of this harvest, it's like grain. You give off the top of the grain, Jesus says, or God says in the Old Testament there, you give this first fruit offering, and I will pile so much grain in on your bag that it will overflow even though you have packed it in. And so I'd love to just challenge you to think about this principle of the first fruits in your own life. And, you know, he gives us the grace and the breath and the energy to contribute to our own households and to the church. through our own physical labor and our spiritual labor. Just even our breath is a gift from God. And so when we think about committing our income and to what we commit our income, we need to maybe think about making more regular voluntary offerings to our church and to charity in proportion to our earnings, and off the top, not the net, but off the top. And maybe you can't do that right off the bat, and I get that. You know, our bills are what they are. But is there any way maybe you could cut back or pay something off early, you know, and just at least be working in that direction? Because that pleases God. It really does when we're willing to risk more. In fact, I'm convinced that most of the time we don't see huge miraculous movements of God in our lives because we don't risk anything. We don't give Him the room to do big stuff. You know, we don't risk big. I mean, there have been times that I have stepped out on faith on something that I believed He asked me to do, and I was like, Lord, I do not know how You're going to do this, but I'm just going to hide and watch, because if You do this, man, You're the man. And He always comes through. It doesn't always come in the direction or from the direction I think it's going to, and it doesn't always come in the form I think it might, but it comes every single time. God is faithful. And so when He says in Luke 12:34 that where our treasure is, our heart will be also, maybe in His presence we need to confess something along that line. You know, where is our treasure? Where is our heart really? So in the area of giving and tithing, I hope that you'll just spend a little time today confessing your shortcomings. I know I will. And just believe in faith that He's going to always provide for your harvest. And if you need to confess, go to confession if it's necessary. But whatever He's saying to you about this Feast of First Fruits, I hope that you'll listen, because it's a really neat principle, and it does challenge us, but it challenges us to step out in faith. And that is never a bad thing. Anytime we do that, that moves God to really act in major ways. So like I said, sometimes we don't see Him move in miraculous ways in our lives because we're not risking big enough. So, you know, I want to challenge you and just suggest or ask you to consider where, maybe it's financially, maybe it's in tithing, but where can you risk the first fruits? In what area can you try to do that maybe this week and make it a habit? So moving on from the first fruits, as I said, first fruits and Pentecost sort of got squished together. And so Pentecost really began with that Feast of First Fruits, and then Pentecost proper began, and it was a basically a 50-day season. And I really like this Pentecost idea because of this birthday of the church, how it's been linked with Pentecost, because I remember my very youngest son's birthday vividly. I had had a C-section with my first child, so when I became pregnant during the 9-month waiting period for maternity coverage following my husband's job change, you know how they make you wait for several months after you change jobs and you change insurance to make sure that you're not pregnant as a pre-existing condition? Well, that's what happened. My husband changed jobs and he ended up having to change insurance, and I got pregnant in that waiting period. And all I could see was that there was going to be another $20,000 out-of-pocket bill for another C-section, because almost always if you have one, they'll make you have another. And I was just freaking out. I couldn't figure out why in the world God had not just waited a couple of months to bless us with another baby. You know, can we not at least get our medical insurance in place so that, you know, we could cover the expense of this delivery? So I was just pouring out my worry to Him during morning prayer, and He answered me so gently. And looking back on it, it makes me laugh, because He said to me, and if this is word for word. Now, you know, I don't mean like He audibly spoke from heaven and thundered or anything, but in my heart, I heard Him say these words, "Sonia, this baby is a gift." I mean, word for word, that's exactly what I heard. And so I was like, yeah, yeah, I know, God, your word says all the time that, you know, children are a gift from God. I get it. Fine. So, you know, I wasn't too impressed with that sentence. Sonia, this baby is a gift. So when my youngest came into the world, in less than 2 hours, too quickly for a C-section or even pain medication, on my birthday, I really did a chuckle at God's extraordinary sense of humor, because He was my very own personal, individual, miraculous birthday present. So He was a gift. And it was so neat, because I just remember I remember being so shocked that he had answered my prayer many, many years ago when I had had my first child. They're 8 years apart. And so when I had my first child, I remember asking God, you know, if we don't have to do this again, could you arrange it so I don't have to have another C-section? And I kept praying that the whole time I was pregnant with my second child. And lo and behold, look what happened. And so I didn't have to have a C-section. It didn't cost that much money. And he was a gift. And ended up, we didn't pay for it. I can't remember why we didn't pay for it. Well, I think it was because we didn't have to pay for a C-section. So we paid for it, but not in that way. And trust me, if you have a baby, you definitely pay for it. You just don't pay for it financially necessarily. Anyway, the point of that story is that Pentecost is called the birthday of the church. And we talked about that in the first fruits and that kind of thing. But in Acts, we see the story where the disciples listened to Jesus' instructions, where he told them to wait prayerfully after his ascension for the coming of the Holy Spirit. And so they were in that upper room, and on this feast day, the Feast of Pentecost, with the remembrance of Mount Sinai, remember, because the Feast of Pentecost also is supposed to commemorate the giving of the law on Mount Sinai, the Holy Spirit fell on them. And we're just about out of time for this segment, so I'm going to have to run, but I'll be back, and we're going to finish that thought, the Holy Spirit coming on the day of Pentecost. Until next time, this is Sonia Corbett, your personal scriptural evangelista with Catholic Vitamins.
Well, Sonia, do you mind? Sonia, I mean, you're challenging us on how we spend our Sabbath. You've got us moving most of our work over to
Saturday
so that we're trying to honor the Sabbath. And now you're challenging us about the clothes we wear to church and the thank you. Bless you, Sonia, and also for the money that we donate to the church. Bless you for your witness, Sonia, and for your honesty about the things that you struggle with or that you need to do better on. Thank you for that.
Hey, we have a little bit of feedback here. This was posted on our Friends of Catholic Vitamins Facebook page. Stephen Hill said, yippee, finally caught up on being a few months behind. What a great episode. While listening to the comments on Engaged Encounter, now he's referring back to the marriage episode.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. While listening to the comments on Engaged Encounter, I recalled a piece of advice my bride and I heard at ours. We've never had the nerve to try it, but the advice was to, quote, argue naked. It can't be done for long with a straight face, end quote.
Catholic vitamin N for nuance, no naked. Gosh.
Well, Stephen, it did make me laugh. And then Mike Kled out in California, he said, Deacon Tom, I finished listening to your marriage episode today. Fantastic. I thought you and Dee did a great job with the material. Thanks for putting together this episode and so many others. Well, thank you, Mike, for your contribution, too.
Yeah, and I think I would like to share a little bit of feedback that made me smile. Dear Lisa Schmidt in Iowa said, I'm reminded of @ Deacon Tom whenever I see the gift of tears mentioned, even by His Holiness, @ Pontifex. That's how you rate Deacon Tom. To use my name in the same tweet.
As
the Holy Father. Yikes. I apologize to the Holy Father, but it did make me laugh. Thank you for that. All right. Do we have anything else? Because I'm anxious to bring our guest up, but if you have anything else, I want to...
Well, I'm just going to throw in one more little plug here. Since we're an affiliate podcast of SQPN, I'm just going to remind everybody out there who may follow SQPN and follow all the podcasts and know that they're scheduling their annual CNMC celebration. This year it's going to be in Atlanta on, do I have the date? I think it's June 6th or 7th it is.
Let's stop for a minute. Now, we're going awfully fast here. CNMC.
Catholic New Media.
Conference
or celebration.
Celebration, yeah.
And this year it's their jubilee. It's the 10th year.
Wow.
And we went to the one back in 2009 and have wanted to go to some since then, and we just haven't been able to get there. I'm still hoping that I can find a way to get there this summer.
Well, we talked about it this morning, and you have to make a decision about a couple other things. But all right.
So anyhow, this is the 10th. This is the jubilee of SQPN. It's actually the 8th annual CNMC. This year's keynote speaker is going to be Greg Willits.
Wow.
From the Catholics Next Door podcast. He helped get SQPN started with Father Roderick. Lisa Hendy's also going to speak. Elizabeth Scalia from Patheos, she'll lead a panel discussion. And, of course, closing talk by Father Roderick.
Mm.
And it follows the Archdiocese of Atlanta's annual Eucharist in Congress, so it's going to be held right in the same facility.
If you were to think about going, I've got stuff here with Catholic Radio, but if you were to think about going, you could go to that Eucharistic Congress, and that would be beautiful, too.
I thought about that, too, yeah.
I just want to say a word about... the CNMC. It was a great opportunity to meet a lot of familiar voices or put faces to voices that we have heard from over time. So if you are a little bit of an SQPN groupie, you may want to consider coming, and you hear some good stuff as well.
Yeah, it was actually our jumping off point for getting our podcast started.
We've told this story early on, and I'll just repeat it. We're driving in the car through Texas. I've been doing a little bit of praying, and I said, Dee, what would you think about us doing a podcast? Well, my.
That probably was me.
Yeah. So, and then I prayed a little bit more, and then I came up with the idea of Catholic Vitamins. I had an example for you when you said, what does that mean, Catholic Vitamins? And I had the A one for adoration and B for beauty in the church. I don't know if I had any more than that, and here we are.
And those were our actual first two vitamins.
Yeah, here we are 6 years later and still doing it. All right, anything else for now?
That's all I have right now.
Let's get to our guest. Yay! Well, as you heard at the beginning of the show, our guest is Lauren, and I meant to ask her before we started our recorded time together. I want to say Muzica. Is that how you pronounce your last name?
Oh, you did great. That's exactly right, Muzica.
Well, Lauren is a licensed attorney in Texas. She has a great passion and a lot of witness for the cause of human life. And I was looking into her background, and we'll hold back from any teasing about being a Texas Aggie, but that's where she started her education. And Lauren is also a graduate, a 2009 cum laude graduate of the Ave Maria School of Law. You were in Florida then, were you, for a while?
I was actually part of the last class that graduated in Michigan, but the school is now in Florida. That's true. So.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, if I kept doing your credentials, Lauren, we could take up a valuable time. What a wonderful introduction to getting to know you this would be. But let us just start with who Lauren was before maybe she had the last name that you shared with us a minute ago.
So you said, I'm sorry, that question, I didn't quite catch the question. I'm sorry.
Tell us about Lauren when she was young. What was your early childhood like?
Oh, very good. Well, I grew up in a loving family. I'm a cradle Catholic. Of course, later down the road in high school, I ended up being a revert to the Catholic faith. And, you know, my faith really colors and influences all that I do. I really credit my parents to taking us to Mass on Sundays and letting us learn about the truth of our Christian and our Catholic faith growing up through CCD and other things like that. I grew up in a home where when you became aware of an injustice, you were taught that you were called to do something about it. And, you know, my sweet mother just passed away this past February. In fact, she had a vision of the Holy Family just before she passed. It was really mm-hmm. beautiful. Mm-hmm. But one thing that I reflected on as soon as she passed was just the legacy that she left and the seeds that she really planted in my life that I pray, God willing, you know, has borne great fruit. But when I look back, I think about when I was 9 or 10 years old and my mom told me what abortion was. And I just remember thinking that this was just a terrible thing and that we were really called to do something about it, of course. I remember after she told me anything that we can do. And I remember her pausing for a second, and I'm sure she was just delighted by her response, and she thought, well, I better capitalize on this while the interest is here, right? And so what she decided to do was call Texas Right to Life, and she ordered pamphlets on life before birth and just some basic information about what abortion was, what it did to the child, and how it hurt mothers and families. And when that information came in, she says, well, we're going to take this around to our neighbors and we'll tell them about abortion. You know, we did it in a very loving manner. And it's funny because I didn't even realize it didn't hit me until after she had passed away. That was really my first sidewalk counseling experience. We went up and down our neighborhood street. We went to every house. Sometimes the neighbors were out front doing yard work, or some of them were inside and they had come to the door, whatever it was. My mom would hang back. She would stand on the sidewalk and she'd let me walk up to the front door, walk up to the neighbor. And I would just say, hi, I'd like to tell you about abortion.
Oh my.
The information. So, yeah, it's just a beautiful memory that I've really come to reflect on, you know, in recent days. And just really has touched me very deeply. And I just think, you know, what a wonderful legacy that, you know, some parents might say, well, that's a wonderful thing and maybe you can do something about it later. And she says, no, we're going to go ahead and do something about it. And so she got that information and, you know, she was there as a support as I went up and down the street and handed out information. So
do you remember any mix of reactions to people that you talked with?
You know, maybe we're lucky because we're in Texas. I may have had a different response if I had been in New York State or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, right, right.
Right. Yeah, most people won't kick a child to the curb at 9 or 10 years old. I definitely think that there was an advantage there, right? But, you know, neighbors, if they did have different feelings about it or mixed feelings about it, I don't remember any huge response. I just remember them politely accepting my information and saying thank you. I'm sure from some that we got slightly warmer responses than others, but you know, it was just, it was something that really left an impression upon me growing up. The other thing that came to mind, too, as I was reflecting after my mother's recent passing was, growing up, we belonged to this small country parish. You know, I grew up partly in North Houston and then in Dallas, and of course now I live in the Dallas area with my husband, so this is also home, too. But my parents actually went to the outskirts of town to take us to Mass because there was just something that they loved about that small town parish. And my mom decided that a couple of summers, my younger brother and I, my other brother hadn't yet come into the picture, he came later, but my brother and I at the time, we went to the St. Vincent de Paul pantry and we sorted clothes and sorted canned food and all of that. And I still remember this one man coming in and he was, you know, clearly struggling with a disability and he didn't have any milk for his children. And so I remember my mom went to, you know, the cabinet or the refrigerator to pull out a jug of milk. And I ran over to her and I said, can I please hand it to him? And she was just delighted. So she handed me the jug of milk and I went and took it to him. And so, you know, these are just very precious moments, I think, that marked my childhood. You know, I didn't grow up in a perfect family. I grew up in a family that had a very basic catechesis. You know, my parents were part of a generation that didn't really understand the teaching on contraception, that didn't understand, you know, what it meant to really embrace the fullness of the faith. So, you know, there were things that I was able to tell them about later as I got deeper into my faith. But I really do appreciate the seeds that they did plant and, you know, about helping our fellow man and that we were called to serve one another here with the precious time that we had on earth. So,
Lauren, I want to, first of all, say that you're right at the edge of our vitamin for today. Our faith topic is nuance, and there's, you know, a difference between, you know, calling ourselves Catholic and not fully understanding what we're signing up for, what we're participating in. But I want to just, before we leave this area, you said in your young years that you went through a reversion. Can you tell us a little bit about what that's about?
Sure. I just remember being in a computer science class in 10th grade and somebody making the comment, well, I don't think I can go to communion this Sunday because I haven't been to confession. And I thought, well, that's, you know, again, God bless my family, but there were a few teachings in the faith that they didn't fully understand. You know, my parents, like I said, grew up in a generation that wasn't well catechized. And so you know, the taste of the faith that I got growing up, while such a conviction to help our fellow man and such like that, on some teachings they just didn't understand, and so they would brush over those, or they would kind of give me the what I call the Catholic light version of those things, right? So I remember thinking when I heard that phrase in this computer class that, well, that's just strange. Why don't you just go to communion? What's the big deal, right? Mm-hmm. And from there, I just really began to search. After my youngest brother was born, he was 10 years younger than me. You know, my parents slowly kind of stopped going to Mass. You know, at first it was, you know, we're recovering from having the baby, and then it's hard to take the baby to church, and then sometimes excuses pile up, and then before you know it, you're only going on holidays. And so I was missing kind of a vital part of what it meant to, you know, take myself to church every Sunday and why that was important. And again, they just didn't understand that, right? A lot of that didn't come until later. So I went on this search, and I realized, you know, this is probably the most important thing that we can be searching for. This is the foundation of our lives. What do I really believe, and why do I believe it? And so, long story short was, I started church shopping. I actually bribed one of my friends. I would tell her, if you come with me to this church service on Sunday, then we can go to the mall afterwards. Mm. And she was, this friend of mine in high school was actually kind of an agnostic, but she liked the bribe, and so she went along. So I had somebody to go to church with, right? And I was even printing packets of doctrine off the internet. I know my parents just thought I was crazy, and I was asking a lot of really tough questions and trying to understand the difference between churches. But finally, I had a friend that said, well, why don't you come to church with me? And she was Episcopalian, which here I was getting maybe at the time, you know, this is before Episcopalianism, I think, went a little bit off the deep end. But she said, you know, why don't you come with me? And I still remember walking into this church, and it says, here we receive the precious body and blood of our Lord Jesus Christ. And I just remember thinking how beautiful that was. Now, if you understand that particular church or denomination, there is really a mix of understanding about the true presence and the Eucharist and things like that. They don't really embrace the full teaching on that. And it wasn't until another friend of mine, actually a gal named Angie, came to me, and she said, well, why don't you come to church with me? And I said, well, what are you? And she says, well, I'm Catholic. And I said, I don't know. And she said, here, I'm going to give you this tape set. And she handed me the Common Objections to the Faith by Scott Hahn, really almost all the objections that I was struggling with at the time, every purgatory to the authority of the church, confession, and so on, right? And so I would go to sleep at night listening to these tapes, and I got hungry, and I just, you know, ordered more apologetics material. Meanwhile, Angie and her family welcomed me into going to their parish. And the funny thing is, around the same time, I didn't know it, but my husband and his family were attending the same parish. They were somewhere else in the crowd. Of course, at this time, I didn't even know who they were. I didn't meet my husband until college. But it's just funny how some of these things come full circle. And I still remember at that first service that I went to at her parish, that I was walking up to receive communion, and she whispered behind my shoulder, she said, Lauren, I don't think you should receive communion. I think you should just go up and get a blessing. And I said, well, I'm still Catholic, aren't I? And I just remembered having this hunger for the Eucharist. And she said, let's talk to the priest afterwards. And so I went up and got a blessing, and I was just so sad that I couldn't receive communion. It's like I finally realized what I'd been missing out on. And I still remember after that service, we went out into the foyer, and we walked up to the priest, and here I was still having this struggle in my heart. Am I called to come home? What does this look like? What does this mean for me? And I still remember when we walked up to the priest, Angie said, Father, this is my friend Lauren, and she wants to come back to the Catholic Church. What does she need to do? Uh-huh. And I still remember this priest took both of his hands in mine, and he said, welcome back. All you need to do is go to confession. Mm-hmm. And so sometime in the next week or so, I went to confession at actually what ended up becoming my home parish, and they had just initiated the Latin teen program there and everything. I got involved, and really the rest is history. I fell back in love with my Catholic faith at the end of high school. I went to college at Texas A&M University, which just has, I mean, they call it like the public Steubenville of the South, right? Just a dynamic Catholic center. And, you know, that really has carried me through. I came home, and the rest is history. So
how beautiful. Praise God for that story that you've shared. And it's been told many different ways. here on Catholic Vitamins and elsewhere, Marcus Grodi's program and whatever, but that's just absolutely wonderful. Did you carry your passion for life into college? Were you doing anything in college?
Absolutely. I don't know when it was that I started realizing that I had some sort of calling to the pro-life movement, you know, and I think just my love for people in general. I'm such a people person. I'm a super extrovert. You know, I remember thinking in college at one point, well, I'll either go into politics or I'll be a youth minister. I really couldn't decide. I ended up double majoring in political science and Spanish at Texas A&M. I went on to get an advanced certificate in international affairs. And I don't know, I knew that I was called to some sort of service. And meanwhile, you know, I think what really got my feet wet, besides parents had really planted in my life growing up, I remember that there was this interdenominational activist organization that's still there today called the Brazos Valley Coalition for Life. And when I entered as a freshman, I was introduced to something called the Stand and Pray program. And this is before, you know, that organization had birthed the very first 40 Days for Life campaign. But we all, you know, from our local church would go and sign up for like 1 hour a week. You know, I remember giving a talk in our Bible study on the sanctity of human life. And I think just slowly I was discovering what an atrocity this was, that we were really dealing with a modern day Holocaust and just the sense of injustice there. Like, how could people do this? And of course, now I have a richer understanding of why women sometimes are duped into believing that abortion can indeed be a solution for them. But again, my understanding and my passion really was growing. And I think I had this inkling that I was really called to pro-life work. And I even say that came in high school at some point, you know, again, as the seeds were taking root and beginning to really grow and bear. So long story short was I got involved in the Stand and Pray program, you know, 1 hour a week. And then I was invited to a sidewalk counseling seminar by a beautiful Baptist woman named Karen Black. She was invited in by the Brazos Valley Coalition for Life, where I continued to volunteer in my college days. And so in the year 2000, I was trained as a peaceful sidewalk counselor. And I just remember being so convicted that, you know, I could really do a lot of good by getting more involved with this. And I still remember one of the points in the training was, she says, I'm going to play a tape for you. And this is a woman who has experienced abortion. And she turned on the tape, and it was just a woman wailing and sobbing. She says that you can't, you know, you couldn't have seen what was going on here, right? I mean, she was just playing a tape, but you know, the woman, she said, was holding her womb and just rocking back and forth and crying about this true loss that she had experienced. And she says, you know, if we're going to save these children, we have to get a conviction for these women as well, because they're also victimized in abortion as well. And so, you know, just these little things that stuck with me. So I began to sidewalk counsel with the Brazos Valley Coalition for Life for the rest of my college career. But I also noticed that because of the scene on our side of the fence, you know, a lot of chaos and people dressing up in costumes and, you know, holding really, you know, I think it was angry signage and things like that, that women didn't feel safe in coming to the fence. That wasn't an epiphany until we had later. And then towards the end of my college career, 40 Days for Life showed up. You know, that was a program that was started, a campaign that was started after the staff at the Brazos Valley Coalition for Life, led by David B. Wright, who's now leading the national effort of 40 Days for Life. You know, that was after that 1 hour prayer that they had around an old wooden table in that office. And so when that campaign started, we were all invited in the community to come out and pray. And by this time, I had made friends with a guy named Peter. He was attending the local parish as well. And so, you know, my friend Peter, who later became my boyfriend and my fiance and my husband, you know, Peter and I and our friends would go out and we would take hours in the 40 Days for Life campaign. And the amazing thing was at the end of that campaign, the abortion rate in that community dropped by a whopping 28%. And they realized that over 100 lives had been spared in Aggieland. And so this was my early introduction to the pro-life movement that I had seen, where things had gone from chaotic and apprehensive to very peaceful, prayerful, and purposeful. And so I realized that this peaceful method really did get results, and that really was the way to go.
Lauren, I want to interject something to explain to you, but also in honesty to our listeners. I have been doing work on the World Wide Web for 10 years, maybe a little more. I've also been involved in pro-life up in Colorado where we lived before and now in Arizona. And in all truthfulness, the name Lauren Muzyka might have been one that passed my eyes on the World Wide Web, you know, seeing something from one of the pro-life sources, but it didn't register. And here's how it happened that it finally connected in my mind. I got the book, Redeemed by Grace, from your friend Ramona Trevino, and right. I read the foreword, and all of a sudden it clicked who you were and why I sort of knew about your name. And I'm so glad that you were agreeable to come on our Catholic Vitamin show. The foreword that you did is just so tender and so beautiful, and it pulled me into wanting to read the rest of the book. And we're making arrangements to, I don't usually talk about future guests, but we're making arrangements to have Ramona on the show in a while and to talk about her book. So I'm so thankful, and what a blessing to be able to talk with a warrior for life. You did a lot of work for 40 Days for Life, and you're now with another organization. You want to talk about the work that you're doing now?
Sure. Yeah, so after college, I ended up going to law school. My friends David B. Wright and Sean Carney got deeper into the pro-life movement. And of course, as you know, as you're alluding to, at one point they invited me to become part of the 40 Days for Life national team. And that was really tough because, of course, it sounds silly for me to say, but why was that tough? Wouldn't that be a dream job, right? But I had this dream of having a legal career, yes, in the pro-life movement, but I saw it going a very different way. And I ended up letting go of that and, you know, basically believing, of course, that the Lord had sent me to law school for a reason and that he would use it indirectly. And I've seen that used time and time again. And he's been very faithful to that, of course. So anyways, I worked for them for 2 years. And then at one point I was called to fill another need. You know, when I had the advantage of being on the 40 Days for Life national team and getting a front row to seeing how God was saving lives and changing hearts all across the nation through this very simple prayer campaign, we got a lot of requests for people who wanted to know how to talk to women. And that had been really a great part of my background. And just kind of another side note, the summer before I went to law school, I actually ended up sidewalk counseling full-time with the Dallas Diocese, with the Respect Life Committee for the Dallas Diocese, otherwise known as the Catholic Pro-Life Committee of North Texas. So I did that the summer before law school and the fall when I came back. Of course, soon after I started working for 40 Days for Life. So that was part of my background, and it was even developed further. And finally, at one point, you know, David B. Wright and I had the tough conversation of, you know, hey, if you feel called to do this, then, you know, while we feel called to focus on the prayer campaign, you have to be the one to discern this and figure this out, because we're not either yet ready or we don't feel called to fulfill that need at this point. And so I left the 40 Days for Life national team, you know, quietly considering this in the background, but not even knowing if it would take off, not even knowing if it would be 1 month or 3 months or 3 years or ever, if this would ever come to fruition. So I went back to work for, you know, the CPLC, the Dallas Diocesan Pro-Life Committee once again for a period of time. And then, you know, finally all the pieces were falling into place. And I just can't even begin to tell you what a wonderful journey this has been. You know, we opened applications in February of 2014. We operate similar to 40 Days for Life in that regard, where, you know, we never go into a community and say, you need us, right? We put out there what it is that we can do to support local communities in training them, in being there for them as they reach out to abortion-bound women and men. And we let them know that, you know, we want to walk with them through this journey, that we want to help them put together a thriving sidewalk counseling presence in front of the local abortion or abortion referral facility. And so, yes, so we opened applications in February of 2014. On April the 1st of 2014, again, it's funny how it was April Fool's Day, but no fooling, we had 22 locations to start. And over the past year, we've grown to 55 locations.
Oh,
and that actually, it's just beautiful. That actually includes four different countries where we have a presence. We have 52 in the United States, one in Canada, Romania, and Australia. And the Lord has saved almost, we're almost at the 500 baby mark at this point by His grace. That's also not including the almost 200 hopefuls now. Those are folks who took information that left to, quote unquote, think about it, you know, they're armed with life-saving literature and a referral to the local pregnancy center. We continue to pray for those, and you'll often see prayer requests, general prayer requests for those folks on our social media. And then 11 workers who have left the abortion business due to the witness of the sidewalk advocates in their local community. And those folks are also referred to Abby Johnson's abortion worker ministry, which is called And Then There Were None. You can see more about that at abortionworker.com. And so we network with the rest of the pro-life movement. But our mission is clear. It's to support, train, to be there for the folks who want to reach out effectively to men and women who are in crisis, who are entering these abortion facilities, and to really give them another way.
Wow, what a story. What a story. Just by way of supporting what you are suggesting, recently a number of us from our parish drove from North Central Arizona down to Phoenix, to Tempe, where we participated in an hour and plus of pro-life work at a Planned Parenthood. The lady that was there as the director for 40 Days for Life for that area was so oriented towards reaching out to the women that were going in, to just being there to want to talk with them, whereas, you know, our mind was more on signs and witness for people driving by. The lady who, Blevins is her last name, I can't remember her first name right now, she was definitely oriented to trying to reach out and see if she could just give somebody a brochure as they were driving in, or letting them know that she'd like to talk with them gently. So what a lesson it was even then for me to see sort of the spirit that you're bringing to the street. So how do people find out more about your organization?
Sure. I think the best way is actually through our website. You know, we've got a wonderful list of frequently asked questions. You can find out about our mission. There's also some wonderful videos. You know, they often say that a picture's worth 1,000 words, and sometimes a small video is worth 10,000 words. So we've got different ways that we kind of demonstrate how we do what we do out on the sidewalk. But that web address is simply Sidewalk Advocates with an S, sidewalkadvocates.org. So folks can go on there, and, you know, and if anybody listening is in, you know, different cities and towns throughout the United States and beyond, you can click on apply, and it's just a 5-minute application that you fill out. You pay a small application fee that covers your starter package, and what we do once you sign up and your application's approved is we send you a professional training DVD that you can put on, and you just get a church room and put it on, you know. And we have professional workbooks that take you through the training. We have everybody sign what's called a pledge of integrity that says they'll be peaceful, prayerful, and law-abiding. And basically, you bring the program to life. But, you know, we don't just train you and set you loose. We also have a separate web forum where people can go and get literature and there's a bulletin announcements, flyer templates, pro bono legal help, just a plethora of tools and resources that they can use to really bring their program to life and to advertise. And then not only that, but we give you full-time staff support. So, for instance, we have a gal on our staff, and her full-time job is to give sidewalk counseling advice. She's just got a wealth of sidewalk counseling experience, even at 25 years young. Everybody just loves Julie and everything that she does, and the rest of our staff, Jenna, Jeff, me, our other volunteers, we're there for our locations full time. And we basically say, when you sign up for our program, we work for you because this is our ministry and we really want you to be successful out on the front lines each and every day.
Oh gosh, as we move to a close, I am just so blessed, and I know our listeners are blessed by hearing the life, the journey, and the witness of Lauren Muzica, who is the executive director for Sidewalk Advocates for Life. She has described how they oversee and support these area organizations where they get started. And what's the number that you said you have going now? How many locations?
55 locations, yes. And we do have another application period coming up in May. We open applications once a quarter, so once just every few months. And you can look on our website. But truth be known, if somebody fills up that application a little early or a little late outside an application period, we never turn anybody away. So, you know, our kind of mantra is, when you're ready, we're ready. We're ready to help you as soon as you're ready to sign up.
Great. Lauren, thank you. Blessings upon your work, and thank you so very much for your testimony and sharing. And we hope that we're able to stay in touch.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you, Deacon Tom, for everything you do to spread the faith, and we appreciate you, and just know you and your listeners will be in our prayers.
We are so blessed on Catholic Vitamins with many of the guests who agree to come on the show. Thank you, Lauren Muzica from Texas. Thank you for your witness for life. Thank you for telling us about sidewalkadvocates.org and the work that you're doing there as the director. Lauren wrote the foreword for a new book, the book by Ramona Trevino, which is called Redeemed by Grace. And that's the story of Ramona Trevino starting to work for Planned Parenthood as a Catholic and her journey to truth. And God willing, that's our plan for our next show. We don't normally share who our guests are ahead of time, but a little heads up that our next show will have an interesting, wonderful, and warm guest, Ramona Trevino. So, after a short bump, we will be back for our close. Dear, we may be a little bit early on this show because Justin is not with us. Fergal is so busy, he's not with us. Fergal, if you happen to hear this, I just sent you a box in the mail. They said it would be about 10 days, maybe 14, getting to you. So
maybe he'll hear this before that.
Yeah, right, right.
Mariana's got company.
But yes, she does. So we're a little bit short, but it was a blessing to have Sonia this time, and maybe we'll have more of her on Catholic Vitamins soon.
Great. So are we going to wrap up, you think?
I think so. Let's do that.
Well, let's do... Oh, got to welcome two new friends of Catholic Vitamins on Facebook.
Our Facebook friends on Catholic Vitamins? Okay.
What did I say?
No. You did right. No.
Well, you were looking at me like maybe I'd said it wrong. Okay. So we're welcoming Sonia Corbett.
What a goober she is.
That's what she said.
What a goober she is. She's been with us for 2 years.
How am I not a friend already? I'm a goober.
And who else?
And Laura Kelly Vannucci. And Laura has got a blog, motheringspirit.wordpress.com. We'll put that in our notes.
All right. She's also an author. And I'll tell you the truth. I've been trying to work with her schedule and our schedule and my sickness. And she's going to come on the show, I hope.
Oh, I hope. She wrote a book, Everyday Sacrament, The Messy Grace of Parenting. And that came out last year.
Yep. So we're looking forward to talking to her sometime soon.
All right.
What else do we have?
Bite of Scrabble for next time, since nobody guessed nuance correctly.
I know.
All right. Here we go. Catholic vitamin O ends in N, 8 letters.
I'm not even going to take a guess. Catholic vitamin O, 7 more letters.
Ends in N. 8 letters altogether.
Yep. And if you take a guess at that, send your guess to catholicvitamins@gmail.com. Or you can send one to the lovely and charming Dee on Facebook. And maybe she'll get
or
that.
Or Friends of Catholic Vitamins.
Yeah. All right.
Except they may not want to do it on Friends of Catholic Vitamins because then other people would see it and they would pick up on it.
That's right.
You know, if they thought that might be correct, they would guess the same thing.
All right. What else?
We have a Vita Humor this time.
Oh, my. All right.
We haven't done this in a long time. You want to read it or do you want me?
No, you go ahead.
All right. Father O'Malley answers the phone.
Wait a minute, is this an Irish joke?
It's an Irish joke, yeah. Father O'Malley answers the phone. Hello, is this Father O'Malley? It is. This is the IRS. Can you help us? I can. Do you know a Ted Houlihan? I do. Is he a member of your congregation? He is. Did he donate $10,000 to the church?
Mm.
He will.
All right, yeah.
All right, I thought it was funny.
All right, it was. I don't know where that came from, but I've heard that.
Oh, a friend sent it to me.
All right. Well, dear friends, you are our friends, and we appreciate having you as members of the family of Catholic Vitamins. We appreciate when you can listen, that you do listen, and comment. What? What? You have your finger up. What?
Does this mean I can like go hop in the car and go get Sonia now?
Pretty quick. Yeah, pretty quick.
Oh, good.
All right. Well, thank you, dear friends. And we will see you maybe for an extra show with Sonia, but we'll see you soon on Catholic Vitamins.
Bye.
Finally, whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is just, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is gracious, if there is any excellence, if there is anything worthy of praise, think about these things. And we'll see you next time on Catholic Vitamins.
This production is affiliated with SQPN, the StarQuest Production Network, leading the way.
The attorney that Dee and I were talking about earlier in the show is Billy Tarasio. She has a great law practice down in the Phoenix Valley, and if you are having marital difficulties or would like to talk to somebody about things going on in your marriage, you might try calling Billy Tarasio's law practice. That's not a commercial. We don't do them on this show. But she's a good Catholic Christian woman, and from her album, Send Me, here is Billy Tarasio with Long, Long Time.
When I was young, I had in my mind visions I held someday I'd find. True love I knew God had planned for me. With childlike faith I'd hope and pray He'd lead me to the one I'd say. The words buried in my heart so deep. I've waited a long, long time to look in your eyes, to hold you and call you mine. The wait was worth the price. You're the desire of my heart, the answer to my prayers, my dream come true. I've waited a long, long time for you. The roads I never should have taken, the times I felt my heart was breaking, sight of the dream. But the moment you came into view, I knew one day I'd say to you the words buried in my heart so deep. I've waited. To eternity. the prince. I'm